Well, based upon info commercials that seem to come on TV late at night, I would say that the things that, as a society, we long for the most, that we desire the most, is good health that can be attained by taking some supplement. Some pill, some additive to our food that would give us good health. Second thing that we desire is to have state-of-the-art exercise equipment. I'm not sure that anybody wants to do the exercises, but they want the equipment, obviously. Third is to buy automobiles that you cannot afford. That seems to be a big commercial that they have on. And it's all about, if you don't have credit, don't worry about it. So it seems to be automobiles for people that can't afford the automobiles. Fourth, there seems to be a great desire to have music from the 60s. And those are major things we desire as a nation based upon info commercials. So somebody's spending a lot of money to sell those things to us, so if you assume there's an interest there, then that's maybe where a lot of our desires lie. But what is it that we desire? What is it that you desire? If you could choose one thing, what is it that you desire most? If you could fill in that blank, I desire most in life, what would be that blank? What is it that you desire the most? There was several years ago, I didn't know the individual, about 5 years ago from my hometown, old town in West Texas. He was at the local golf course and was walking back out to his pickup when he saw two people starting his pickup and driving off with his pickup. It wasn't necessarily a real new pickup. It was several years old at that time, but it wasn't old enough to be some collector's item, but it was important to him, and he ran and jumped in the back of his pickup. The police would later say, you know, this isn't the most intelligent thing to do, but that was his pickup, and he wanted his pickup. And so for 1 hour, these two people in the pickup drove as fast as they could, making all kinds of curves, trying to stop, do everything to throw him out of the back of the pickup, but he hung on tightly because it was his pickup. Finally, after yelling at other cars as they'd go by for help and things, he finally was able to break the window and grab the guy on the, I guess, the passenger in it and start choking him or whatever. And finally, they stopped and ran off, the two people that stole his pickup. He drove to a farmhouse, and they called the police. The police came out with their canine units, and they found one of the guys that was hiding in the cornfield. And the next part of the story has nothing to do with my illustration. I just love this part of the story. The next morning, the other guy, a juvenile, turned himself in, having spent the night in the cornfield, and emerged with 300 mosquito bites. I've always wondered, did somebody actually count those mosquito bites, or did they make an approximation? But I think at that point he thought jail sounded a lot better than another night with the mosquitoes. But look at the passion this guy had for his pickup. I mean, he risked his life. He did everything that wasn't reasonable, but it was his pickup. He desired that pickup. That's really the question before us. What is it that we desire most? What is it that you long for most? And in the Beatitude, as we're moving through the Beatitudes, as we come to one, it's about desire. It's about longing. It says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. As we'll see, that's a strong phrase, a strong picture of desire. What is it you desire most? Well, just to refresh our thoughts, our minds about the Beatitudes, in the context of Matthew, to be blessed or blessed are means to stand in the favor of God, to stand in the grace of God, to stand in that position of favor, approved by God. So as you embrace these characteristics of the Beatitudes, it's saying that if these characteristics, if that characteristic is yours, then you stand in God's favor. You're approved by God. You stand in His grace. It's not a sense of obtaining His grace. It's not a position of obtaining favor, earning it, but it is a position that God favors, God blesses. So to be blessed by God in that regard. The first beatitude is, focused to address the poor in spirit. The poor in spirit are those that recognize that they have no spiritual assets. They are spiritually bankrupt. The second beatitude focused on mourners. Mourners are those who they do so because they recognize their own sinfulness. We looked at three aspects of mourning. Mourning is that sense of grief over loss. Grief over loss. Then there is that sense of sadness that might come as we look at the evil around us. But a third aspect, which I think is primarily in focus here, is this sense of mourning over our personal sins. Very similar to the first one. The first one, we realize we don't have assets. But the second one actually is focused on a debit, that we are sinful, our sinfulness. The third one, as we looked last week, is centered on the aspect of gentle, or the old favorable word, meek. The gentle acknowledge their dependence upon God and thus live a God-controlled life. Gentle, the sense of meek, is not to be a doormat, but rather to be controlled by God. Then this week, we move to the fourth beatitude, which is about hunger and thirst. What does it mean to hunger and thirst? And that's where we begin. What does it mean to hunger and thirst? Well, to hunger is a figurative way of conveying a very strong craving, a seeking with eager desire. If you hunger after something, it's a craving, it's a desire. But we're looking at something that's very strong, not something that's just a desire, as we might say, well, I have a craving for, meaning I'd kind of like. I have a craving for a candy bar. I not have such a strong craving that I'm willing to go to the store and buy a candy bar, but I'd like a candy bar if somebody would go get me one. But then there might be that stronger sense of a craving. I really want candy. Nobody's willing to go to the store. I'll go to the store and buy my own candy bar. But that's not the same as I crave a candy bar because if I don't get it, I'm going to die. If I don't get some food, I don't know if I can make it through another day. That's the picture of hunger. Hunger. For most, and there may be exceptions in here, but they would be few exceptions, that we've ever really experienced hunger. Hunger to the point that we weren't sure if we're going to make it. And in the time that Christ spoke these words, there were people that had experienced that. At a time in life, and there are those places still today, that when you worked and you earned your wages for that day, that ensured that you would have something to eat tomorrow. But that was it. There's no promises beyond that. So to hunger is a strong term in the context of this passage. And then the second is to thirst. To thirst. Well, likewise, it's a figurative way of expressing a painful awareness of one's need. An eager longing for what will refresh, what will restore. To thirst. To thirst. You know, you're supposedly to be able to go without food for quite some time. But going without water becomes a very short amount of time. And one can go days, weeks without food. But to go without water starts to take tremendous effects upon our lives, on our body within a short amount of time. So a few days without water, one is not there. Now, for most of us, we've never been hungry or thirsty in that regard. But if you've been ill, you may have suffered dehydration. And you may have known the effects. Even though you were drinking, you weren't able to keep it down. And so you started to notice the effects of being without water. But the picture here is one that has no food, one that has nothing to drink, to long for it. It's a passion, a passionate desire here for hunger, for thirst, for food, for water. And it's put in that regard of now the passion is for something different. this aspect of longing for basic needs. Basic needs. But the picture here is not for food, not for water. That's the context as we see the image. Blessed are those that hunger and thirst. And if we were filling the blank, we'd say for food and for water. But that's not Jesus' point. Blessed are one that has that kind of desire, that kind of longing, that kind of drive, but for something else. What do the blessed long for? Well, in this passage, they long for righteousness. Righteousness. The term righteousness usually draws in our mind the picture of standing before God in that perfect condition of acceptance because He has declared us justified based upon the work of Jesus Christ. Righteousness is that positive righteousness that is ours because of the work of Jesus Christ under which Jesus or God the Father declares that we have. That forensic sense of righteousness. But that's not what's in view here. It's not that aspect of righteousness. We're not talking about salvation here. Here, righteousness points to a righteousness or an uprightness as a compelling motive for life, for how one conducts his life. It is integrity. It is a virtue. It is purity of life. Even correctness of thought and feeling in the way we act. Righteousness in this context, thus, is personal holiness. It's a righteousness that focuses on conduct, and it springs from our relationship with Jesus Christ. Essentially, it is patterning one's life after the will of God. It is a drive to conform to God's standard. Righteousness becomes the most desirable pursuit in this context. To hunger, to thirst. What do we hunger and thirst after? Not after a weight machine, not after a new car, not after this or after that, not after those tangible things, but after righteousness. But within our society, even within a religious aspect, longing for hunger and thirst would be after other things. Not righteousness. We might find that people long for, intensely long for an experience. To experience something religiously. To experience some spiritual dimension. To experience some miracle of God. But that's not what's in view here. What's in view here is righteousness. Something about the way we relate to God. Something about the way we relate to other people that we relate based upon His standard. That we would be upright. That we would have integrity. That we would be righteous. Well, who has shown this kind of a desire? Who has ever shown this kind of desire? Let's part ways from Matthew and the Beatitude for just a moment. Look at Exodus chapter 33. Exodus chapter 33. You'll recall that Moses, in that time in the wilderness, had this very special relationship with God. And as the Israel was moving and had their city of tents, they would move and set up the tabernacle and set up the perimeters around it. And Moses met with the Lord in the tent of meeting. People could look and they could see this, that nobody went there except Moses. Joshua would go along, but Joshua didn't have the same opportunities to enter into. And verse 11 talks about this relationship. Chapter Exodus 33:11. It says, "Thus the Lord used to speak to Moses face to face, just as a man speaks to his friend." That's an intimacy. That God would speak to Moses as a man speaks with his friend, as one friend to another friend in this passage. Now, this isn't that God somehow changed and became Moses' best buddy. but it shows this intimacy. He is still the holy God, the God that's to be feared in that appropriate reverent sense, but this relationship. There's another account where Moses wants to see God. He's talking, he says, you know, disclose yourself to me. Let me see you. And God says, well, you know, you can't see me or you die. Nobody can see God and live. And Moses is longing for them. God says, well, here, I'll put you in this cleft of rock. So he tucks him away in a kind of a place of safekeeping, a way of protecting them somewhat from the glory of God. And then God passes through, and it's as though Moses saw the backside of God. So he just got a glimpse of the fading part of God's glory. To see God. Moses says, that's what I want, to see you. It would almost be, if you would, in the sense of looking at an eclipse of the sun. And so to see the eclipse of the sun, if you look directly at it, you damage your eyes. And so you get a box and you put a pinhole in it. And you look in the box and you see the reflection through the little hole going into the box, and you can see the eclipse. When I was a child, I remember my father was a mechanic and had welding equipment, and which now they say you should not use to see the eclipse, but you get welding glasses and look at the eclipse. And that's something that I understand you shouldn't do, but at that time, that was one way to see the eclipse because you had these shielded glasses. Well, that's in a sense what Moses was seeking to see God. And God said, well, if I can shield it where you cannot really see it, but you can only see a kind of a distorted vision of it, then maybe then. But his desire was to see God. What is it that we desire? David, look at Psalm 42. Psalm 42. We saw this psalm earlier this summer as we looked at it. In Psalm 42, verses 1 and 2, and we've made this into a praise song that we sing occasionally. As the deer pants for the water brooks. And here you have to imagine not a deer in a lush forest, but a deer on a prairie where water is scarce and a deer has to travel some distance to get to the water. As a deer pants for the water brooks, so my soul pants for Thee, O God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. That was David's pant. David took that same image of thirst and said, as a thirsty deer would long for water, that's how I long for God. And that's what Jesus is looking at, that type of longing. Another one would be Paul in Philippians chapter 3. Philippians chapter 3. In Philippians chapter 3, Paul is speaking of his personal longings, his personal desires. In the first few verses, he kind of introduces, and then he moves into some of his past attainments and listing these things that he has by his heritage. And then in verse 7, he says, but whatever things were gained to me, whatever things were advantageous to me in this world, his degrees, his family history, his finances, his position in the religious world, whatever things were gained to me, these things I have counted as loss for the sake of Christ. Verse 8, more than that, I count all things to be lost. Now, he doesn't say all things are lost. His perspective. He says, I count all these things are advantageous, and from my perspective, they're as though they were lost. They're good for nothing in comparison. More than that, I count all things to be lost in view of the surpassing value of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things, and count them but rubbish in order that I may gain Christ. So Paul said, you can take everything that is advantageous to me, everything I've earned, everything I've worked for, things that have meaning in life, degrees and status and finances, things that are of value, but compared to knowing Christ, I count them as rubbish. I count them as trash. They have no value when you compare them to something as lofty as Christ. It doesn't mean they have no value. They have great value, but it has no value when you compare it. It would be almost as being in a store and you see a penny, or walking down the sidewalk and you see a penny. The penny has value. But if you were to compare that penny to $1 billion, its value is so diminished that it's as though it has no value. So Paul is saying, all of those things he counted as loss. Well, it's that type of desire that we see in Matthew. Those illustrations from those three individuals weren't exactly what Jesus was speaking of in the Beatitudes, but it's that type of desire. There were three. And all three of them desired something that this passage does speak of, this intimacy with God. When one is hungry and thirsty, what do you want? What do you want when you're hungry and you're thirsty? Well, the passage says it exactly. The goal is to be filled or to be satisfied. If you're hungry, if you're thirsty, you long to be filled. You long to be satisfied. You long to have that hunger, that thirst met. And so it is in Matthew 5. It says, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied." A promise. God says, this will happen. You will be satisfied. You will be filled. The word here for satisfied, or if you have the NIV, it says filled, is the same word that we would find in the gospel accounts when Jesus is feeding the 5,000. Jesus, you'll recall that this group, 5,000 plus, have come out to see Jesus, to hear Him. They've spent the day listening to Him teach. And the disciples say, it's getting dinner time and this group is surely very hungry. And there's nothing here for them to eat. And there aren't any 7-Elevens around. You need to send them home. And Jesus says, well, you take care of it. You feed them. And they go, well, what do we have? You know how much money it would cost to satisfy them, to fill them? They asked Jesus. When I was coaching, one year the position that I coached, those players in those positions, I had that group of high school kids over to our house, our apartment, to eat. And we were fixing these steaks and for them. And Robert and I were having this discussion about buying food for them. And she had in her mind that our goal was to fill them up. And I said, no, you cannot set that as the goal. We just want to feed them. Because I'd seen these kids after games and when they go into restaurants. They consume any and everything that's not tied down. But the picture here is not just to feed them, not just to sustain them until they can get to another meal, but it is to satisfy, to fill. It doesn't say that God will just give you enough to get by. He will kind of take the hunger pains away. It says you shall be filled. You shall be satisfied. Here the promise is that God will fill. God will satisfy. That the desire will be not the desire for water and food, the desire for righteousness. If that's your desire, God will meet it. God will fill the one who desires righteousness with that very quality. Not an ability to keep a list of do's and don'ts, but conformity with God's will. Not an external alignment with a set of man-made rules, but an alignment with the heart of God. What do you desire? What are your aspirations here? William Barclay, in his commentary on this passage, talks about the grammar that's used in this particular passage. And he says that when it's saying, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, that one might expect the genitive there, the noun, to be in a certain case of the genitive case, which would mean basically that one hungers and thirsts for some righteousness, a part of that righteousness. But instead, it's an accusative here which looks at the whole. So it's not hungering, thirsting for some aspect of righteousness, some righteousness, but the whole of righteousness. See, there can be a group out there or a person out there that is, you know, basically we look at them and say, there is no goodness. And that person, you know, is not a mark of goodness. There's somebody else that, you know, they have some good traits to them. But that's not what's in view here. It is a whole of righteousness. What is it that we long for? This beatitude becomes in reality not just a statement. It becomes a question and a challenge. It in effect places a demand for us. How much do we want God's righteousness? Do we desire to be righteous as much as a starving person desires food? Do we desire to walk with uprightness as much as a thirsty person longs for that water? You know, the cartoons, The Far Side, which if you ever read those, you'll know he takes some situation that may be common in life or some picture, and then he kind of goes to the absurd part of it. And in one of them, he shows this guy that has crawled across the desert, and he's come upon this little building. And in this building, this guy sells aquariums and fish. And so inside this building, out in the middle of the desert, are all these fish tanks full of water. And here's this guy come crawling in from across the desert. And the owner looks at him and says, if you're not going to buy anything, move on. You know, to hunger and to thirst. And to be at the point of seeing what you're hungry and thirsty for. And to have God say, and just move on. No, it says that if you hunger and you thirst, God will fill. God will satisfy. What is it that we hunger and thirst for? You know, it's looking at qualities. Qualities of Christ. Qualities of a relationship in the way we see God and relate to God. And the way we see people and relate to people. Based upon God's standard. That we're upright. Not based upon our standard, man's standard, but God's standard. That we're upright. That there's an integrity, that there's an uprightness. It is an ethical challenge in this passage, a little different from the first three we've looked at, where they looked at areas of that directly went to something about us. Where the first one says, you have no spiritual assets. You're bankrupt, poor in spirit. The second one looked at the sin of our sense of our personal sinfulness, that we mourn because we see that we're sinful. The third one, it was in a sense of where's our dependence? The gentle are controlled by God. The gentle depend upon God. So that sense of dependence. And this one, we could look at it and say, well, wait a minute, that's a departure, because this one is about just a quality trait, a uprightness of righteousness and integrity. But actually, it fits very much with those. For this to be one's desire, one's passion, one's heartbeat, then it is to recognize that's not who we are apart from Jesus Christ, apart from God's empowerment. So to hunger and thirst for this is first to recognize those other things are there, that I'm spiritually bankrupt, that I'm sinful, that I need to be controlled by God. And so as I acknowledge my bankruptcy, as I acknowledge my sinfulness, as I begin to depend upon God, and then I turn and say, this quality of being able to relate to you in an upright manner, this quality of being able to act and conform in a way that I can behave around people in a way that is what you called for, flows from you. So it's not if I hunger and thirst for this, I can obtain it. but rather I will be filled. I will be satisfied that God will infuse and work in my life to provide this. The Beatitudes are not an external standard to obtain. It is not a list of things that I look at and say, I've got to make that work. But rather, as we'll see through the whole Sermon on the Mount, it is something that results from an inward-outward transformation. As God transforms us on the inside, it gives evidence in an outward world. What do we desire? What do we desire the most? Christ calls us to long, to have a passion for righteousness. Will you stand with me as we pray? Father, there are so many things that come into our lives. There are so many things that take our attention. There are so many things that we become passionate about. There are so many things that we become so intense. But Father, help us to have the perspective that this passage calls for. Help us to see things as Jesus directed, that we would hunger and that we would thirst. Not after money, not after things, not even after spirituality in a vague sense, but directly after righteousness. To know You, to be conformed to Your standards, to reflect Your perspective, and in knowing that as we embrace that, You will satisfy, You will fill, You will complete that, for it's Your promise. And we do pray in Christ's name. Amen.